I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Megan Grove. Megan is the owner of a wonderful store in Hyde Park Square called Kate. Megan, you actually opened the store in 2011, and you are catering to a demographic that I love, and so does my 17-year-old daughter. How did you choose that demographic in terms of items to sell?
My career as a stylist works with women ages 20 to 55. So because I work with them on a styling standpoint, I kind of understand what our customer is looking for.
So where'd you get the name? I know you have three beautiful little girls, and I don't think any of them are named Kate.
No. I decided to name the store Kate because I wanted to give it a personality. I wanted the store to represent a very classic, feminine, sophisticated woman.
And like I mentioned, you're right in the middle of Hyde Park Square, very close to our offices.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like being a part of the Hyde Park Square business community?
I love it. I also live in the area, so just being able to be involved on what is happening in the square and just being a part of the community, it's a lot of fun.
Well, and it's kind of unique. You have a lot of different events that the Hyde Park Business Association puts on, especially through the holidays.
Mm-hmm. We do. Recently, we just had the traditional tree lighting ceremony that we have every year, and kids come to the square and meet Santa. We also had a shop, sip, and stroll event in the square, which was great just to get families and adults and people out into the square to do some, you know, kick off their Christmas shopping. Every weekend in the square, we have things that go on. We have choir groups that sing, and we have free valet parking for customers who decide to come shop local versus going to the mall.
Well, speaking of shopping local, you mentioned the mall, but you also have another competitor online, the online shopping. How do you deal with that? How are retailers, especially small retailers, how are you competing with the big stores that have online shopping and the ease that goes along with that?
We provide outstanding customer service.
Well, that's true, right? Because, I mean, when you go into a store, part of the experience is trying it on.
Right. And it's also just working with what we know our customer is looking for. We get people in the door. We know what they're looking for. We get them into, you know, what they want. And we send them home happy.
Which doesn't always happen on an online experience.
Correct.
Probably even at a large mall store.
Are you thinking that in terms of, as a way to make your store and others like it, to have that competitive advantage, the whole outstanding customer service, that experience of shopping. I mean, are you seeing more and more stores who want to survive, frankly, take that approach?
I think so. I mean, one thing that I just try to focus on personally is just building relationships with my customers. I know my customers, they're friends, they're family, they're people that have come back time after time. And I think that's really important. I think it's fun to be able to walk into a store and the
everybody
person knows
know your name.
Yes, exactly. And they know what you came in for. And,
sure.
And they know that what to they know what to show you, what's new.
Let's talk about you in terms of your being an entrepreneur. What advice do you have for others who want to open their own business?
Never give up. You know, it's hard, but if you have your mindset to something, just keep on going. And the obstacles in your way, if you just have that mindset of what it is you want to do, they'll move for you. And you just have to keep believing and be positive and have a great attitude and network and communicate and believe in yourself.
And probably make occasional adjustments to your business plan.
Mm-hmm. Occasional, maybe like once a week.
If folks would like to learn more about Kate, maybe you can share your website.
Our website is katehydepark.com, or you can like us on Facebook.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Megan Grove. Megan is the owner of Kate, which is a retail women's clothing store located on Hyde Park Square. And Megan, I would think you have your finger on the pulse of the economy working in a retail store like that. How is business out there?
Business is great. We're having a very successful holiday season, and I couldn't be more excited.
And you've been in this business for a long time. I know you graduated from school with a degree in
apparel,
merchandising,
mm-hmm,
right?
Apparel merchandising and business from IU.
And then you had experience working at what was then Federated, and you then was a store manager for another small store. You bought Kate a few years ago, a couple
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Yep.
So you've had a long history, even at your young age, really, relatively compared to some of us. You have had a lot of history in retail, and so you've seen the recession. Are you feeling that people are now getting a little more confident, opening up their wallets again?
Yes, they are. But I think on that note, we definitely made changes within the store to accommodate people's situation with the recession. And I think just continuing to know what it is your customer is looking for is making it easy.
And certainly in a store like Kate, which is very local, I'm assuming people from that region shop there, but you also attract people from all over, don't you?
Mm-hmm. We have a pretty good customer base from people around the greater Cincinnati and northern Kentucky, people who come down from Columbus, from Indianapolis.
Do you have people that just come to Hyde Park, park the car, walk around, and just shop?
Yes, those are our weekend shoppers. People come from, you know, all over the place if they're not from Hyde Park. It's fun to get those people in the store.
Well, there are a lot of unique shops, I think, in that Hyde Park area. And you also offer valet parking now, so it's really easy for people to come there on the weekend.
Free valet parking on Saturdays, yes, during the holiday time.
So, Megan, you actually bought the store, Kate. What lessons have you learned? I mean, what have you gained that you could maybe offer as advice to someone out there listening today who may be considering starting their own business?
Definitely to plan. The first step is getting your business plan together to make it what it is you see, what is your vision, and putting it all on paper, and then researching, you know, the market, researching trends, talking to people who are in a similar industry, and just really trying to get an idea for how it's done.
You mentioned trends. It's fascinating to me how things that are popular today were also popular 30 years ago. How do you keep up with them? And is it true? Do trends kind of recycle?
They do. They just get updated. Designers take them back, they edit them, and a couple years later they get updated and they come back. That happens. I try to stay on the upper end of trend. I don't like to have too many trendy things, hence the name Kate. I like it to be, you know, kind of classic and a go-to place for good basics and denim, but trends are funny.
Our area here in this region, the Midwest, how far behind are we what may be happening in terms of clothing trends, say, in New York City or Chicago?
We are very conservative in the Midwest, which is another reason why I try to keep it a little more classic, but definitely places like New York and LA are very trendy.
Do you get your ideas from there too?
Well, I do. I do a lot of my buying in New York.
So you actually get to go to some of these really wonderful cities to shop and decide how and what you want to bring back into your store?
Yes.
Well, that's fascinating. And your store, again, is called Kate. It's on Hyde Park Square. Mm-hmm. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. We're getting into that time of the year when taxes are on most people's minds.
Well, and particularly this year, because there's so many changes brewing with the fiscal cliff and everything, that I think people are even more attuned to it than normal.
And a lot of people don't know when they should actually engage an outside professional to help them with those issues.
Or whether they should engage a different professional because maybe they were getting one level of service and they've grown their business or become more complex and they need a higher level of service.
And as we all know, we think taxes are going to do nothing but get more complex over time. So if you do feel you've just gotten out of your league in terms of understanding the rules, how to maximize your deductions, it may be prudent for you to actually talk to a professional to see if they can help you, because a good professional most of the time save you as much money as the fees, and many times much more than that.
Choosing a CPA is a little bit like choosing a doctor. You, in many cases, don't know exactly what it is they do. You know the end result, and you know how you can relate to them, but you don't know exactly how they do their work. So how do you go about choosing the right CPA for you?
Well, one of the best ways is to talk to associates, people who are in similar situations as you. If you're a business owner, talk to other business owners and see who they work with, why they like the individual or the firm that they work with, and why they don't.
Right. It's almost as important why they don't like someone or why they chose to leave a particular firm. You know, what services do they get? What do they need? How do they interact with their CPA? I think you need to find a CPA that's going to interact with you the way you want them to.
When you're making reference to a CPA, a certified public accountant, because not all tax professionals have that designation. So if you do want an individual who is licensed as a CPA, make sure you ask that. Check out any disciplinary actions or licensing statutes that they may have gone through their boards of accountancy.
And make sure that you have some references. So if you don't know someone that's worked with that CPA, ask the CPA for references.
And other services that that organization may be able to provide to you is also important. For example, in our firm, in addition to being CPAs and tax professionals, we're certified forensic financial analysts. We do valuation works as well to help families and businesses shift wealth. There are a lot of different things that CPA firms can do. So make sure you understand what it is that you need and whether or not the firm that you're speaking to can help service those needs, or at least know others in the community that they can refer you to get that done.
Well, and make sure that they service other businesses like yours, and maybe some businesses that are larger and more complex than yours, because yours may become larger and more complex as time goes on. And it's nice if you're able to maintain the same relationship.
Also, look for someone who can help you think about things differently, maybe some creative ideas, taking experiences that they've learned from other individuals or businesses so that they can help you even achieve greater success and save taxes.
Make sure that you feel like you can relate to the person, because at some point, the communication between you and your CPA is very important.
Also, fees are often on many people's minds. So take a look at the way that your professional would charge you. Avoid at all costs preparers who base their fees on percentages of refunds. And make sure that any refund that is due to you is sent directly or deposited into your account, not to the preparer who then will say that they're going to send the money on to you.
Well, and make sure that you get an experienced CPA that understands what it's like to be an entrepreneur, you know, that they're used to dealing with entrepreneur-owned businesses.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney Faulkner Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Today we're going to talk about some tax saving strategies that can help people that own their own businesses, self-employed individuals.
Well, Crystal, one benefit of being self-employed is that there are some strategies available to you that there aren't available if you're just an employee. Of course, the detriment to that is it's a little more complicated to do your tax return.
It is a little more complicated, but certainly the benefits of owning your own business can certainly far outweigh the additional complication and any costs involved with that. For example, there are a lot of items that you can deduct when you own your own business that you can't deduct when you're a traditional employee.
Or if you can deduct them as an employee, there's a limitation that effectively may prevent you from getting a benefit. For instance, even something as simple as your car, if you use it in your business, can be deducted without a limitation as long as it's for business.
Absolutely. And home office deductions. If you can qualify, you may be able to take a deduction for a portion of the expenses of running your home, including depreciation on your home. So certainly that's something that you should take a look at if you can qualify for a home office deduction.
And all your business equipment, if you work out of your home, your computer, your office furniture can all be expensed or depreciated.
Certainly. And if your children work for you,
you can expense them.
You can't expense them, but you can take deductions for services that they provide to help you in your business, as long as they're reasonable services. And the good news, in certain situations, the child may be able to avoid tax if they're underneath the thresholds for having to file tax returns.
And they can even avoid FICA tax on those earnings.
In certain instances, they certainly can. So if you do have your children working for you, which we like to say is a great experience for a child to learn that there's a relationship between work and money, and you pay them, then as a family, you can take the deduction. The child will pick up the income and may not have to pay any tax on that.
Well, and an added twist to that, if you have the cash flow, is to take the pay that you give the children and have them put it in a Roth IRA, and it'll be there for their retirement many years down the road.
That is a great gift. One of the best gifts that you can give to your child is helping them understand the importance of savings, such as in a Roth IRA. Also, KEO plans, or self-employed retirement plans, a self-employed 401k, a simple 401k. There's all types of plans that may be available to individuals who are self-employed. And again, I love the idea of taking a tax deduction for money that I put away for myself for future years.
And if you're self-employed and you have a spouse who works, and maybe you don't really need your self-employment income to maintain your lifestyle, you can put a great percentage of your income into a retirement plan such as a solo 401k. So it can be a great tax savings opportunity.
There are a lot of things that self-employed individuals can take advantage of, including business trips, intertwined with vacation, assuming that you can qualify. So there are all types of benefits that you may be able to take advantage of. So take a look, making sure that you're taking advantage of all the deductions that you are eligible for. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Stuart Aiken. Stuart is the CEO of Dunnhumby USA. And Stuart, you were on about a year ago, and boy, how time flies, because it just seems like yesterday, but so much has happened to Dunnhumby within that year. Let's share what some of those great stories are.
Well, our growth has been continued significantly. We're now up to 605 people. We were just four people 10 years ago. So our growth continues from a people standpoint, from a client standpoint. Our clients continue to grow, continue to prosper. A great example is actually Kroger and Macy's, both here in town.
Judging by their results, you've done some great things for them.
I think it's generally their philosophy towards customers and how they're looking to treat customers in a customer-centric way.
Yes, that's true, but I've heard that the CEO of one of those major organizations calls Dunnhumby, your company that you lead, their private weapon. And it really is about getting things personalized, getting information in the mail. I love getting my Kroger coupons for all the things I love. I really enjoy my Macy's reward cards. Everything's so personal, all about the relationship. And that's what Dunnhumby does, correct? You help those organizations and all of your clients and help their customers, their current customers, be happier.
That's right. Our philosophy is, how do you personalize to the individual and deliver value to the individual? And a great example that you just quoted right there is Kroger's coupons that they send you in the mail that are actually for coupons that you can use.
Exactly.
Unlike the coupons you might get in the press. For Kroger, that's a thank you back to their customers for being loyal back to them.
It's a society. I mean, we're so bombarded with information. And I think it's just refreshing when you do feel like the stores that you shop at care about you enough and the whole personal relationship.
Right.
I mean, how do you suggest, maybe if you're an individual either working for a company or own a company that's not as large as Macy's and Kroger's, how can they take the same philosophies and apply them at a smaller level?
The first thing I would do is look at the time you're spending trying to recruit new customers versus focusing on existing customers. And what you'll find is way too many customers spend more time trying to recruit versus spending time on existing customers. With existing customers, you have headroom with respect to their growth. And if you show them loyalty, we've proven that they will in turn show you loyalty back. And that's largely how both Kroger and Macy's have grown.
And that's because the existing customers already know you, they already believe in you. You just need to do more with them.
That's exactly right, Tom. And it's like the coupons you get in the mail. They know you, they know what's important to you, and then they'll deliver that value to you if you're focused on them as customers, not them as assets for the company.
So how do you balance that whole personalization, really getting to know the customer, with this whole privacy issue? Because at the same time, you don't want to feel like Big Brother is watching and, my goodness, how do they know that I just bought that product?
That's right. And for us, it is the most important thing we're focused on. And the balance is against the value. And every customer will balance their data against the value that they get back for that data. And as long as companies are providing that value back in sufficient ways such that the consumer can offset that trade-off, you'll be fine as a company. And companies need to start focusing more on the value they're delivering for the data they're collecting.
Folks would like to learn more about Dunnhumby. What's your website?
www.dunnhumby.co.uk.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Stuart Aiken. Stuart is the CEO of Dunnhumby USA. And Stuart, your company's been in the news a lot lately. You're about to break ground on your new headquarters building, which I think you've already expanded before you even started.
We've grown that downtown space about 25% larger than what we originally planned.
It's got to be exciting to have such phenomenal growth.
It's tremendously exciting. It's exciting for our employees. It's exciting for our clients. And it creates a real energy in the office.
Well, and speaking of energy, you know, Dunnhumby USA was recently named one of Fortune Magazine's best places to work. That's a wonderful thing. What gives rise to that? What kind of culture do you promote to win that kind of recognition?
It's fantastic. We were voted 17th best place to work in the entire U.S. for mid-sized companies, and it's a great honor. Frankly, I'd like it to be higher, and we're going to push for higher. But it's our openness. It's, you know, I don't have an office. No one has an office. We give 5 weeks vacation. We are a very flat organization. Anyone can talk to me at any time, and we promote that. And I think that, and the fact that we're also a very innovative company, leading-edge company, makes it exciting.
And to think that you started this organization here in Cincinnati, U.S. headquarters with, what, three people in 2002.
That's right.
Fast forward 10 years, now you have more than 600 people through what we hope is the worst recession we've ever seen in our life. How do you explain that kind of growth?
It's largely due to companies, retailers realizing, and CPGs realizing, they need to begin to understand their customer. And the more they understand the customer, the more they'll be able to deliver value to those customers and personalize the experiences of those retail brands and brands to the consumer themselves.
But how do you get your employees excited about that? You're one of the best places to work in the entire country. It's a lot of data analysis. How do you get them excited about coming to work every day?
It's actually very easy. When you're dealing with large amounts of data and you're able to help consumers in a troubled time with getting the right prices on the shelf, the right promotions that are important to people who are frankly struggling right now, it's an easy way to get employees motivated to help our clients and ultimately help the end consumer.
I would assume that you hire a lot of recent college graduates, a lot of technical people, but you must do something to really assimilate them into your culture very rapidly.
We do. We have what we call our boot camp classes, where it's a full week of immersion, learning our culture, learning our values. Before we even bring them in, we interview them under two banners. One is, do they have the capabilities to do the job? And the second one is, do they have the cultural fit to fit into the organization? And I was interviewed that way as well by Edwina Dunn and Clive Humby, one on the capability side and the other on a cultural fit. And if you don't fit on either side, you won't fit the organization.
You really believe in staff engagement, employee engagement, don't you? Even in terms of what your building design is going to look like. Do you also get engaged and do you have their input as far as how you interact in the community, how you give back?
We absolutely do. In the same ways we listen to the consumer to help our clients, we listen to our employees with respect to how we're going to build our new building and facility. But we also listen to them from a community standpoint, and they are absolutely passionate about the community. And in fact, some 260 of our employees so far this holiday season have been working at the Free Store Food Bank, giving of their time. Dunhumby donates their time as well to work at the Free Store Food Bank to help hungry children.
If folks would like more information about Dunhumby, the website is?
www.dunhumby.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Dino Lucarelli. He is the owner and founder of the Lucarelli Tactical Group. And Dino, what is that term mean, tactical group?
Well, there's a lot of consultants and advisors who claim to be strategic. My sense is that most entrepreneurs and business owners know what they want to achieve, but sometimes they need people to tell them how to go about certain tactical things.
And so as a result, you're distinguishing yourself because you can actually help them execute.
We get calls to do things that are very specific, such as obtain a bank loan, put together a business plan, or approach investors. Those are things that are self-contained to a certain extent, and often that leads to additional work. But initially, people just need a certain particular initiative accomplished, and that's what we aim to do.
And it tends to be in the financial arena?
It's financial as well as operational. We help companies go through growth, whether it's organic or through acquisition, merger, find investors, essentially put together a plan that makes the most sense and optimizes their investment dollar.
And recently, you had an article in the Courier, the Cincinnati Business Courier, about health costs and medical costs. So how do you advise clients, for example, along those lines?
The medical cost arena is one of the least predictable expenses that companies have. When managing a pool of employees and their associated medical costs, it's very, very difficult to predict the expenditure. Unlike other costs which are predictable, such as utilities, healthcare costs are associated with the people in the business. We can't determine the health of those people. What we can do is deploy tools, statistical analyses, and some of the more sophisticated actuarial information and data that allow us to be more scientific in that calculation.
Well, what issues should a company consider when they're reviewing their healthcare program?
The number of costs associated with managing a healthcare program, one, of course, is what is the deductibles you set up, and it has to do with plan design. plan design is very important because it can be a competitive advantage or disadvantage in the context of finding the right talent. So plan design is critical to achieving at least a competitive balance with the others in your industry. But then there are also things like self-insured versus fully insured. A self-insured program has a number of cost drivers that are relatively complex, but when applied appropriately can result in an overall lower cost, lower spend in the healthcare arena, but also provide perhaps better coverage for your employees because you can have expanded network coverage.
Well, it seems that I used to see a lot of companies that were self-insured, and then that trend seemed to go away, and now it seems to be coming back. Is that what you're seeing?
The larger employers, 200 or more employees, are headed towards self-insured. Recently, we've seen the growth in programs such as wellness, using your healthcare dollar more appropriately to design perhaps not just wellness, but preventative care programs. Employers are rapidly understanding, with the help of medical insurance professionals, there is an optimal balance between the cost of wellness and preventative care versus the cost of treatment care. And those treatment care expenses are the least predictable and the most expensive.
So how do you go in and help an organization, Dino?
The management team often makes mistakes in terms of assigning this to one group, say the financial group or perhaps the personnel group. In fact, putting together a healthcare plan and administering that plan has both strategic as well as financial impact. And so the first thing I would do is make sure that we have full participation from the senior executive team. What kind of employee do we want to attract?
Dino, if individuals are listening today would like information about the Lucarelli Tactical Group, what's your contact information?
Our website is www.lucarelligroup.com. Our phone number is 859-331-6522.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Dino Lucarelli. Dino is the founder and owner of the Lucarelli Tactical Group. And Dino, I know you go in and help companies implementing various strategies that they may have in the financial arena, everything from obtaining financing to helping them purchase a company or sell a company. But you also get involved sometimes with helping them manage their cost. And healthcare cost is a big cost for almost everyone and one of the hardest to manage, I think. What are some of the strategies you employ to help companies keep a lid on their healthcare costs?
Well, Tom, this may sound like a dodge of sorts of the question, but one of the most important things that a company can do is select a very competent, qualified healthcare broker or healthcare advisor. The days of a company having a resident HR executive or CFO who understands these things, those days are gone. The complexity of this cost decision is so great, and the number of variables and sort of scientific tools available to help with this are abundant. And the old school thinking is one that is too costly for most companies. It's a challenge for financial people to admit or acknowledge that, you know, there are things outside of our realm. So oftentimes the decision is relegated to someone in finance or HR.
Well, and the reality of it is you got to stick with what you know. This is could be too expensive of a decision not to make sure that you bring in people that are just very knowledgeable about this, very specialized in this area.
Healthcare costs are rising at a rate that's faster than most any other cost in any business. And with that being true, we should dedicate the right level of resource and analysis to it. It's just a non-traditional approach to bring in outsiders to handle this, because in the past, it was a broker CFO conversation, plan design was done, and then the costs were paid. But when these costs are growing at a faster rate, sometimes 2 to 3 times faster than any other cost line item, it's just incumbent on smart financial management to ask for help.
What are you telling your clients in terms of planning to minimize healthcare costs?
Well, predicting is one thing, but being proactive is another. There is significant growth in the industry of this wellness program initiative. And wellness programs are far more significant than a website where you can query what ailment might be happening to your child. Wellness programs actually can provide financial incentives to people to take care of themselves, and there are companies out there that are actually measuring statistically and empirically through medical testing the health of the people and the improvement from one day to the next. And with that kind of measurement and that kind of, I'll say, empirical data, you can be much more predictive than we've been in the past.
Well, some companies even charge employees who have certain health conditions more for their health insurance.
That's true. And there's a lot of debate in the industry about that, about being punitive. Employers used to feel it was taboo because that was a form of discrimination. However, when we go for any kind of insurance other than healthcare, we're rated based on our profile. And when you look at an employee who is unhealthy relative to an employee who is healthy, the employers really in this competitive era cannot afford to assume everyone's healthy only to have those costs go out of their control. You know, there was a lot of controversy out there, and employers have often, under their breath, said, well, we'll only hire healthy people. That, of course, is discriminatory. However, the healthy employee is far more productive, is a longer-term employee than the unhealthy employee.
Do you know if people would like more information about you, get in touch with you, what's your contact?
Our website is www.lucarelligroup.com. Phone number is 859-331-6522.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Angela Cook-Fraser. Angela is the principal at Kilgore Elementary in Hyde Park. And we also have Tim Von Hoff with MITCA. And Tim, what does MITCA stand for?
MITCA stands for the Michigan Collegiate Telecommunications Association, but we don't really spell that out anymore because now we have members in all 50 states. And we have more members actually in K-12 than we have in higher ed at this point in time.
And we recently had Mary Schluter on, who is the founder of an organization called PIE, Partners in Innovation and Education. And she partnered with your school, Angela, with financial education program that I really want to talk about because I'm an advocate for financial education for children. Let's share with folks what you're doing that's so innovative over at Kilgore.
Well, thanks to our partnership with PIE, we had the opportunity to add a program into our enrichment program, which is known as Mustang Mondays. And this was an opportunity for all of our students school-wide to have exposure, but also be enriched with opportunities they wouldn't be exposed to based on a regular curriculum. So we took the idea of using STEM concepts, the standards for Common Core, and we built in where Mrs. Suter was able to come into our school building, being not only one of our parents, but also being a valuable member of the community, to expose our students to the whole financial aspects, going beyond just going to the store and using your parents' credit card or buying allowances. But we had the opportunity where they were learning about different techniques and marketing strategies from SWOT analysis.
Well, how do they do that?
We went through a 6-week session where the students were engaged in 40-minute to an hour minute sessions, and they had the opportunity to be exposed. Mrs. Schluter was one of our presenters, and we were partnering with NKU University, learning the different concepts of financial literacy. They took those final concepts and turned it into an application, which is known as our Lemon Smash.
So an app like you'd see on your smartphone.
Oh, yes. From that, the kids created everything from what the graphics look like. There's a huge cow as a cash cow, and lemons are coming down. And they, based on how many lemons you're able to turn them into lemonade, you're able to gain points, and which turns into money. And so the more money you receive, the more you're able to bank. And the kids came up with all of the concepts.
That's wonderful. And you say the children, how old are these children that were participating in that?
This is from first grade through sixth grade.
So they were really able to not only learn the importance of financial education while they were having fun,
yes,
developing a really cool piece of technology.
A business, really.
A business.
Yes.
And so you've incorporated so many different learnings into that very fun activity for these children. And Tim, your organization has been wonderful because you helped fund, or you provided a grant to help this continue, correct?
Yes, that's correct. We viewed it as a very worthy project. Grants were awarded to two schools this year, one in Michigan and, of course, Kilgore, and it was based completely on merit.
What did you look at? What was so exciting for you as you made the decision to grant an award to this school?
We had two categories. One was impact and one was innovation. And we felt that this particular proposal really addressed both of those grant opportunities. Not only that, but it looked to us that it had a very good likelihood of being very successful because of the pilot project, Lemon Smash.
Is it scalable? Do you think this will move to other schools?
Well, that's our goal. A part of it, us being the beta center for this project, the goal is to not only expose our students to the concept of financial literacy, but to also actually see it come to life, where the funds from the app come back to your school. So the goal is to expose this to other schools in Cincinnati Public Schools where they have the opportunity, whether it's Kilgore or whether it's Rothenburg, they have the opportunity, the kids can create it and they bring money back to their school.
So how does the money get generated that comes back to your school?
So once you purchase, so you can go on now to the Lemon Smash, you can pull it up on Google and you can go on and purchase the app. The funding comes back to our district, which comes back to our school.
Folks would like more information about Lemon Smash or MICTA, how can they find that?
Well, they can go to the Kilgore Elementary website, or they can go to Partners in Innovation and Education website as well.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guests are Angela Cook Frazier. Angela is the principal for Kilgore Elementary, a school in Hyde Park in Cincinnati. And we also have Tim Von Hoff, who is the Chief Operating Officer of MICTA. And the two of you have gotten together on a little project that sounds fascinating, and you've ended up, not really you, but your students at Kilgore, have actually developed an app that's now available. People can actually purchase on the internet, and the proceeds from the purchases of that app goes back and benefits Kilgore. Has this project done what you thought it would in terms of success, or is it even more successful?
I think it's a combination of both. We are at the foundational stage part of the application, but we're hoping to expand, and with the support of MICTA, we're able to do just that. So we're at that ground level waiting to explode. So I don't think it'll take us very long at all.
And Tim, speaking of MICTA, do you fund other types of projects similar to this, or where do your grant monies go?
Well, this is actually the first year that MICTA was engaged in granting funds for any project, so we awarded two. We received 17 letters of intent, and the Kilgore project and PI partner project is one of the two projects that we funded. We funded another project in the Detroit metro area at Rochester Public Schools. That one involves special education children.
And Angela talked about the application that runs on a smartphone, but it runs on a Sprint.
Yes, it's enabled to run on the Sprint network. And so the significance of that is that a student can work with the device on the Wi-Fi network in the school building, but they can also take the device any place they have access to the Sprint network, home, school bus, and continue to do their work off campus.
Just to get a picture in my mind about what this app is intended to do, what is it about the app that makes a child want to participate in it?
I think for the most part, when I hear from the students, one, knowing that it was created by students, they know what they wanted to see. We had the students go through different sessions where they actually viewed it and gave us feedback on how we can add and change it. They know what they want to see and what's the best video games or games out there to keep your attraction. For the educational side of it, the educators love the piece that we're teaching those concepts in a new and innovative way, that they're learning those same concepts but in a different format. So it's not the old time lecture way of teaching. Mm-hmm. Here's this process and here's another way to think about it. Many kids love the graphics and the different incentives that you receive based on how far you score with the app. So they were the ones who led the whole project and telling me, because I probably would have done it a little bit differently, but with their input, they know what sells and what they want to see. So by them knowing, one, it was created by students, two, the graphics, what attracts them to the wanting to purchase it. I think the price gauge as well is great, with it being 99 cents. And then just the opportunity that they know we can expand it to the next level. So that's our goal for the upcoming year and the years to come, that we're going to expand to not only the Apple format, but we're also going to expand this where we are creating other apps for students.
Well, how will you measure, for example, if this app is having the educational component that you hope it has?
Well, just like we did this with our beta year, we gave a pre and post test on the information that was presented to the students even before they created the application, where they were given, here, what do you know about SWOT analysis? What do you know about the different forms of marketing and other forms of financial literacy? And then we gave them a post test as well to kind of gauge and see what their level was. And there was significant difference between what they knew in the beginning and what they learned afterwards. And then by being able to support that with the application, other students are able to tell them, hey, check this out. Here's a new way to do things differently. They don't think about it as being educational based as kids, mm-hmm. because sometimes they want to shy away from it. It's more seen as educational fun, which is great.
And if folks would like more information about PIE, which is Partnership for Innovation and Education, and the Lemon Smash program, where can they find that?
They can go to piemedia.org, or they can go to kilgoreelementary.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.